We have with us today President Bullock, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Tackett, Councilman Cartier, Councilman Street, Councilman Penrose Hollins, Councilman Smiley, Councilwoman Diller, and Karen Barlow, my legislative aide, will be taking the minutes today. What's your pleasure with the minutes from the previous meeting?
Motion approved.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of the October 9, 2012 meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. And please let the record reflect that Councilman Retta has joined us. Councilman Smiley will be, Councilman Weiner will actually be running a little bit late. His intention is to attend this meeting, but just run a little bit behind.
Excuse me, I think I might have, I was looking to see if I had a website printout with the pictures put down there by you.
Okay. First item is ordinance number 12-124, introduced by myself. Amend the grants budget, appropriate federal funding of $285,000 for the United States Department of Transportation through the State of Delaware Office of Highway Safety to the Newcastle County Department of Public Safety for the purchase of in-car cameras. I've had discussion with the department on this particular ordinance, and in light of the fact that there was some minor change in the equipment that was going to be bought rather than body cams, it would actually fund 50 in-car cameras. And the actual meeting of the highway safety, while the funding has been tentatively agreed upon, the final decision is going to occur on Monday by the highway safety office as to how this funding is going to be distributed to all the police departments. What I've been made aware, and I actually called Mr. Minner down at the highway safety office today, he's the law enforcement liaison. They had an overwhelming amount of law enforcement agencies that were requesting for assistance in buying the in-car cameras. So to err on the safe side and to assure that the amount that has been committed actually occurs in the meeting on Monday, I will be tabling this ordinance tonight till the next meeting. Okay. Asked Captain Setting, our acting chief of county police, to be with us this afternoon, and you'll look around the room and see that several members of our executive staff and different command of our county police department have joined us this afternoon. There were suggestions. As we normally do, we send out as far as the agenda. If anyone would like a particular item put on the agenda, add it to the agenda. And there were requests to take a look at our overtime and extra duty grants in particular. And so we have put that on the agenda today, and they'll be discussed in some great detail, and hopefully we'll be able to have any questions answered that we have, and any questions that may not be able to be answered can be can come back to any of the various council and all of council. But first, I've asked Captain Setting if he would give us a brief update on the police academies, our staffing, and some of the recent promotions within the police department. So Captain,
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the invite. I'll start with the academy, if that's appropriate. There are 29 in the academy that are county police officers. No injuries, and they are scheduled to take the Council on Police Training final exam tomorrow. They do quite a bit of preparation for that test, and we suspect that they will be passing. At that point, we will finish the particulars for graduation and move to graduate this academy on the 20th of December at the Riverfront. Because it's such a large class with an additional officer from the University of Delaware and three additional officers from Dover PD, and they also fund that graduation. That's part of their acceptance into the academy. And we're looking forward to graduating this academy, assigning these guys to the platoons, and reinforcing the patrol division, sir.
Captain, if you would, as far as our future academy, is it actually on the books for a start date for our next academy?
Yes, sir. And, you know, unfortunately, as the market hardens, more and more officers with over 20 years on the police department are leaving. This week alone, the last 2 weeks, we've seen some very important employees put in their papers because they are finding jobs out there. One of them's here, the Frank Cook, one of the beloved members of this police department. If you don't know him, I don't think you live in Newcastle County. But they're finding jobs, and now the class that we need to put in would have been 15, sir, but now at the attrition rate at present, it's going to be closer to 19. And if we're ever going to hit this authorized strength of 370 officers, we're going to have to compensate for that attrition by having an academy in the first part of 2013. And yes, that, as I understand it from the executive's office, that is on the books.
And do you also, to follow up on that, I think we're all aware, those that have attended graduations, that we have a number of recruits that come from other agencies throughout the state. Is there room in the upcoming academy for that to occur? Also, will we be accepting others from other law enforcement agencies?
We almost always do, sir. The training from our academy is sought after by other agencies because it is one of the, considered by Council on Police Training to be one of the better academies in this state, and other agencies, if it lines up that they're hiring and we're having an academy, yes, sir, they ask for it to put somebody in one of the chief seats.
Okay. Thanks, sir. Any questions of Council as we're moving around here? Councilman Street.
Just so going forward into the next academy, I'm confused, I don't know about other folks, but what are the minimum requirements, education and otherwise, to enter the academy?
Well, sir, there's more than just one or two of them. I mean, I can't list them all from memory. I don't have it in front of me, but at present, I know that if you have served 4 years in the United States military and achieved the rank of a non-commissioned officer, that any education is waived. The other educational requirements, while we were seeing a reduction in viable applicants, I believe, and I have my staff here, but if I'm wrong or speak out of turn, someone jump in here, but we had to reduce the amount of credits to get viable applicants on the police department. And one of the testings where there were 660 applicants, after we vetted them through the processes, we were able to hire 19, Robert?
Yes, sir.
660 applicants. Lieutenant O'Sullivan.
Lieutenant O'Sullivan, Newcastle County Police. In addition to what Captain Setting said, if it's a E5 or above sergeant, there's not a non-education requirement. If otherwise military, then it's 2 years military, 30 credits, or at least an associate, 60 credits with no military.
Councilman Street, follow-up question.
So then, education requirements minimal without military experience. We require an AA.
Correct.
60 credits.
Okay. Thank you. Councilman Cartier?
Kelly, I want to extend my congratulations to the department that they are working with a requirements with the military service. Because, as you know, I've come back from Washington at the NACO conference many times saying, you know, that the Joint Chiefs of Staff are asking local governments to make it possible to hire the veterans that are being demobilized. Try to find wherever possible, you know, opportunities for them to work in local government. So that we're doing that is highly commendable, and I expect as time goes on, that pool of applicants will grow because we are demobilizing huge amounts of people from the U.S. Army and other branches as we wind down, all these foreign wars that we've been involved in.
Thank you, Councilman. Captain?
Yes, sir.
I guess if you want to touch maybe on just some of the recent promotions that were announced, and I know that there were some postings that come out today for some future promotions also.
Yes, these are vacancies that are already in the budget and exist within the agency. The frontline supervisors, which are your sergeants that are out on the road with the rank and file officers going from complaint to complaint to issue to issue, the road sergeant is the one who is keeping tabs on everybody, knowing where they're at, knowing what they're doing, answering their questions. Usually somebody that's savvy in regard to the law, departmental procedures, and so forth. Now, not having those supervisors on the road when you have 240 officers, the lion's share of the police department in the patrol division, you have to have supervision, you have to have checks and balances, and they do that. And those promotions were actually sought after by the former Colonel Scott McLaren, and he had met with the executive staff of the police department. We had made our picks, we had agreed to who we were going to promote, and then for whatever reason, Colonel McLaren held off on making the promotions. But I made a quick stride to move forward with the promotions because I believe more sergeants on the road, more oversight, more checks and balances is a better thing than waiting. And I know that there's an acting in my title, but I have no intention of sitting on my hands in this position because it doesn't make any sense. These men and women want to be led. They want to be told what our direction is. Right now, the direction is that we are going to go to predictive policing. We are going to stop running on the 911 treadmill from complaint to complaint, which is completely and utterly reactionary. You know, the only team that you have in the police department, the Special Operations Command, that's out there being proactive is Special Ops, because the patrol division is inundated with 911 calls. We have the facts and figures to show that. And then you have the detective division, which is a very hardworking division, but again, a completely reactionary group. They wait till after the body is dropped. They do a bang up job of coming out here and putting these puzzles together and figuring out who's who. But until we reduce the calls for service, until we reduce overall crime and reduce fear, we're not doing anything. Right now, and you're going to see in this in a few moments here when we put these crime maps up, right now we have the ability to identify the areas based on nuisance crimes, the things that the constituents actually care about. You know, the speeders, people drinking in the park, people smoking pot on the corner. These calls are going into the 911 center. They're being triaged. They're being put away. They're being put at the bottom of the ladder. And so the officer is running from complaint to complaint because he's got to handle this first, the domestics first. Then you get to the accidents. Then you get to the fights in progress. And eventually you get down here to these drug complaints, these open container complaints, graffiti complaints, all these quality of life issues. By the time you get there, the officer's frustrated. He's running around, she's running around. The constituent's frustrated, and that's our customer, and they're not happy with their service. So we have to start fighting this from the top down. We have to actually reduce the calls for service. And the only way we're going to do that, and this is proven again and again, if you're a student of Bratton or the broken windows theory, you know, you have to attack the quality of life issues so that we can actually reduce part one crime by saying, hey, look, folks, we're on guard. We're watching. We're not going to let you drink in the park because the guys that are drinking in the park at 7 o'clock are the guys that are doing the burglary at 10 o'clock. We know this from when the people were jumping over the turnstiles in New York City and Bratton said, we're going to put cops at the turnstiles. And everybody said, you're a madman. We don't have enough cops to keep up with the robberies and rapes and the shootings in the subway. He said, we're going to do it. We're doing it. And they did it. And in 6 months' time, you have a 60% reduction in rape, robbery, and shootings because guess who was jumping over the turnstiles? We can't put a cop on every corner, but we can police better. Right now, we can look at a map, and it doesn't matter, you know, who's calling it in, but these complaints will actually show a balloon over an area, a date, a time, right down to a street. If we can put the resources from special operations in these places before the crime occurs, we have one of two possibilities. We're either going to make an arrest, or we're going to suppress crime. When we suppress crime, we do not tolerate it. You reduce the calls for service, you reduce fear, and you improve the quality of life in this county.
Couldn't agree more. And I want, you know, we'll open it up to council as far as follow-up, but I want to get back just to the promotions.
Yes, sir.
From a standpoint of the promotions that were made, male, female, diversity, I know that you're very committed to that. The department's management is very committed to that. Kind of give us an overview of the promotions that were just made, male, female, diverse.
Yes, sir. I guess first and foremost, we promoted Sonia Trudeau. That was the first Hispanic female ever promoted to the rank of sergeant in the history of the county police department. We promoted Brian Burke, a white male from the patrol division. We promoted Reggie Laster, a black male from the detective division. Another white male from the detective division was promoted, and we promoted Katarina Botterbush, sir, also. Sorry, there were six of them, just rolling them off, if I apologize. And she is a white female. And that pretty much speaks to the type of diversity. And also what we were looking for, we promoted two people from the street. you know, to say that you can get promoted from the patrol division. There are opportunities in this agency for everyone. Fair opportunities. If you can make it into the top five, rule of five, you can be selected. We did select two people from the detective division and two people from other parts of the agency. I think it was a fair and diversified promotional list that was agreed upon by the command staff while Colonel McLaren was still in chair. And we're grateful to Colonel McLaren for moving towards getting the promotions done as well as putting this class in. We're looking to the future, sir. Okay.
Thank you, Captain. Questions from council? Mr. President, did you?
Captain, you
yes,
raised an interesting term, predictable or predicting policing.
Yes, sir.
Could you expound or embellish on that for us, please?
If you don't mind, sir, I'm going to call the subject matter expert to the podium and actually put on a display of what we're talking about and how this is working and why it's working right now and how we're using federal grant monies to actually predict where crime is going to occur and have the officers in that area. And earlier during the finance meeting, I wasn't asked to speak, but I just would like to reassure council members that worry if an officer was assigned to Wilton and not there, Councilman Smiley in particular, sir, those tattletale boxes in the car tell the supervisor and recon by just looking at a screen. If they're not in the area of assignment, they have to answer to that, and they'll be disciplined. And furthermore, if I might just add to that, each pay job has a set amount of language. It doesn't just speak to you get paid for 8 hours. It tells the officer where to go, when to go, who to report to, what information has to come from the criminal investigations unit, and they have to produce whatever stats that they had, whatever property checks they conducted, and they have to be in line with that pay job. If they're not in line with that pay job, they'll be reviewed, they'll be removed from the right to work pay jobs, and that's happened in the past.
Councilman Smiley.
Since you raised the issue, just let me clarify, and we can go back and play the minutes of the finance meeting. I never made the comment or the statement that someone belonged in Wilton who wasn't there. What the question was during in the finance process with grants, when it was to targeted areas, were they assigned to those areas? And there was never implied that an officer was supposed to be somewhere and was not there. So let's clear that right now before we go forward with anything else.
No reason to go forward, sir. Agreed upon that. I was just reassuring you that when an officer is assigned to an area, we have our checks and balances to make sure they're
there. I'm down there. I see them.
Oh, I mean, we have quite a commitment in Wilton.
Unfortunately, there are more felons than there are officers, but I do see
I'm working on it, sir. And I am splitting the 12-man team in special operations as a point of information since Wilton came up. With a minimal impact on patrol, we're going to split the 12 mobile enforcement team officers into two teams. We're going to pull one sergeant off the road. We're going to assign that team to the Northern District with its first and primary goal of bringing one of the top five areas for crime under control, and that's Edgemoor. The second team will be responding to the Wilton area, and they are going to be bringing Wilton under control. That team will stay in Wilton until we have resolution. I was a lieutenant on Charles Platoon when a young man who was a true victim was murdered in Wilton. It is almost a city upon itself, and policing it is not as simple as saying, we'll send some cars through. Those days are done. We have to use this predictive policing to see where and when the time is going to occur. And again, the leadership in this room is going to have to lead from the front. And this is a department-wide message. This is no longer a team. This is no longer the special operations branch. This is going to become cultural. We are going to move the amount of calls for service down. It's going to create availability for the patrol officers, and you're going to have a more proactive and progressive patrol division. Now, I would like to speak to more of it, but I did bring these people in to speak, and I don't want to step on their toes.
Absolutely. Go to a question from Councilman Street, and then once that question is answered, feel free to start calling upon the staff to present the various overtime, extra duty, and deployment and the different special ops and everything.
Yes, sir.
Councilman Street, sir.
I have raised, I raised very vigorously in September, methodology of policing, proactive versus reactive.
Yes, sir.
And I'm concerned that you do become more proactive as opposed to reactive. And I'm not going to ask you to put you on the spot to answer today. But you went to New York, so I'm going to go to New York by way of D.C.
Yes, sir.
And from what I understand, from what I've read, when not only did they put police when they went to take back New York City. Police at the turnstile, they were also walking three across to take back the street.
Yes, sir.
When they went to take 14th Street back in D.C., they had three to five in the car. Sometimes they only left the shotgun in the car. But on the two occasions where I raised the question of whether or not we need to look at in high crime areas going to more than 1 minute cars, that was rejected out of hand.
I won't reject the idea, sir.
And all I'm requesting is, I think it, in my opinion, it's worked in other jurisdictions. It's beneficial to the community, and it's beneficial to our officers who don't have to be in those crime areas all the time by themselves. You run the police department. I'm not. I'm just saying that's a suggestion that I made. That heretofore was rejected out of hand, no response to, and I'm just hoping that you look at it, consider it. You know, you're running the police department, make a decision. But in my view, what we're doing right now is not working good enough. And we need to be innovative and creative to the extent practical. And as some of my colleagues say, another tool in the toolbox, to me, that's something that should not be considered. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just a quick, you know, side note to it, sir. First off, I'm open to any ideas because I don't believe that we are going to continue to do things the same way because it's always been that way. I intend to prove that we can move the agency into a proactive mode and we can reduce overall crime. I'm a graduate of the Senior Management Institute for Police, and I studied Bill Bratton extensively, and I believe that if they can do this in New York City, we can do it over 427 square miles with 370 officers. But the problem you have is, you know, impacting positive change and creating public value. You've got to get buy-in. You have to get people like these people that are sitting around me to agree that what we're doing right now used to work, but it doesn't work now. And we have to get off this 911 treadmill. We have to reduce overall crime. And it can be done, or I'm not the man for the job. And when that time comes, I'll step down. But we are going to reduce crime. We are going to reduce calls for service. Can we stop all crime? Can I tell you there'll never be a domestic in Newcastle County or a DUI or a car wreck? Of course not. But I can tell you that I'm going to make a real effort, a valiant effort with these police professionals to change the way we police this county. And that's my commitment to you, sir. And I think there is strength in numbers. The mobile enforcement team was created by myself. I handpicked them in, I deployed them, and it's been the most proactive team in the history of the police department for the last 10 years. I believe this is the direction to go in. We don't need one team, we need three teams. We get a team in each, a central team, a north team, and a west side team. You have geographical responsibilities. Now you have a sergeant to go back to and ask, this is your area, what are you doing? But right now what we're doing, because the Met team's so successful, is we say, guess what, Met? Edgemoor blew up, get up there. Wilton blew up, get down there. Route 9 blew up, get over there. And that's a mistake. We have to have geographical responsibility. We have to have these guys off of this treadmill. We have to get partnerships with WPD and DSP. We can't push the shooting down Route 9 into the city, and the city jumps up and pushes it back out on Route 9, and we've got people with AK-47s in Rosegate. You and I have seen it. We've been boots on the ground together. I shut Rosegate down. I shut down that open-air truck market. You were W1, Kate, sir, the witness.
Well, I was W1 to it, and I was a witness, and as soon as we left, we closed the store, it opened right back up.
It never got as bad as it once was, but we do have to have maintenance, sir. I do agree. We have to have maintenance in these areas, and I will. And that's the idea of having a team assigned permanently. I can't do that until I get the 29 kids in khakis standing behind these badges and deploy them into our county and make this an entirely departmental, cultural thing, that we all have a responsibility to be progressive community police officers. That's what we have to do.
Councilman, one more thing, and I don't want to monopolize the time, but you open the door, so I'm going to come through it briefly.
Yes, sir.
in terms of deployment and where folks are, you know, there are people in the community, including me, that have a view that our officers are spread out so far and so thin that when something happens, sometimes officers are a million miles away and they
hit the pedal going 1,000,000 miles an hour from 1,000,000 miles away to get somewhere. And that's a practice that we've had for an extended period of time. And I don't think it's the best practice in terms of public safety, number one, to reduce crime, number two, to get to the crime. And it's certainly not good for the general public if we've got to go from one end of the county to another to address that. So I just think that's something that you could look at. And again, to me, when there's a crime, to compel an officer or officers to come from 1,000,000 miles away going 1,000,000 miles an hour, it's just not good.
No, it's a safety issue, sir, for both us and the citizens. I agree with you. We are, you know, in my short 2 weeks of grabbing these reins, I am trying to review many things, and that's one of them, along with, I don't think I'm going to be able to eat the whole cow today, but we are reviewing several things, including our canine IOP and how we handle dogs and when we release and when we don't. There's going to be some language changes. I've already braced the officers that there is going to be change. Change is sometimes not easily accepted by police officers, but I will tell you, so far, I have had unwavering support from the senior command staff as well as the Fraternal Order of Police. I met with every single member of this police department in a matter of 5 days with this very same message that we are doing this. We are moving in this direction, or I'm not going to sit in this chair.
Well, he opened the door with K-9. I was going to wait till last, and I will.
Okay. He let the door
that everyone's aware, because some of the requests for subject matter on this meeting and future meetings is that we've already touched on the fact that this afternoon we're going to focus on the overtime and extra duty jobs.
Yes, sir.
And we've already mentioned that we're looking at, after the beginning of the year, to turn around and broach the subject of canine responsibilities,
yes,
policies, procedures, deployment, and everything in a separate meeting, because I think it's something that we can really take a look at, explore. You have a tremendous team.
I do, sir.
Tremendous team around this room of command folks, and I think everybody getting together, taking a look, evaluating, reevaluating, coming up with new ideas or things you'd like to see changed, you're going to have plenty months ahead of you to come back in and give reports on it. And I know that, you know, there are items that are very near and dear to everyone in this room. We want to be there to support everyone, but we need to know what your needs are and, you know, what you're doing and how you're going about it. So with that, like I say, K-9 is truly a whole separate topic.
Yes, sir.
And like to hold that for the beginning of the year so that you can come back and visit the whole policy, procedure, and everything.
I'm in agreement with that, sir, as I do not have my K-9 people here. I would like the subject matter experts to be sitting with me, but I am still reviewing the language and proposed changes in that IOP.
If Councilman,
I trust you're not going to bring the K-9s with
you. I was getting ready to ask. Why not?
No, Mr. Shrink. Smiley, they scare the hell out of me.
Okay. Maybe we could convene down the
street. Captain, if you would, feel free to introduce
and call
upon your
staff. I'm going to start with Lieutenant Wendy Hudson, sir, if you don't mind, to review our grants.
Lieutenant Wendy Feaser.
That's what I said.
Yes, I heard that too, sir. I'm just going to stand up here so it's a little easier. One of the questions that came about was, what are the grant sources that we have? So I just went through some of the grant sources that are available to the county. We have several federal grant sources, the Justice Assistance Grant or the JAG grant. That's probably one of the largest grants that we get in. Historically, we have split that 1/3 for training, 1/3 for salary and overtime, and 1/3 for equipment. The second federal grant we have is the COPS Fund, which is currently funding 6 new officers that are in the academy now. The other federal grant is the Bulletproof Vest Partnership, and that helps us to buy the bulletproof vest for the officers, and that's been ongoing for a while. Through the state, we have a Criminal Justice Council. The only current grant we have with them right now is for equipment, and we are pretty much coming to an end on that one. Every year, we get SLEEF money from the state, which we must spend on equipment, SALI money, which we usually split between overtime and training, and then ED money, which goes just to the drug unit for overtime and drug operations. New this year is the Funds to Combat Violent Crime, which is offered through the state. It's through the tickets, the money collected from tickets. That's going to be a yearly thing. For this year, we have selected to buy some equipment, but we can use it for overtime and training and other sources. The Office of Highway Safety, which I believe, sir, you commented on, they always have some money available for overtime jobs for traffic. But there was also some money this year for cameras, which we're still waiting to hear back how many we're going to be getting. And then finally, you get HUD money, which we've been spending for overtime. Right now, it's in particularly off of the Route 9 corridor. All these grants are audited on a quarterly and annual basis by either the federal government or the state government. We have to submit reports. If we alter how we're going to spend the money, then we also have to notify them of those changes that we're doing. So we can go into more specifics if you want when we're done. I'm going to turn it over to Lieutenant Crow, who's going to talk about how we spend the overtime money then.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Senior Lieutenant Crow. Back in July, I was transferred from a patrol squad by Colonel McLaren inside. And one of my responsibilities entailed using grant money, both federal and state, to deploy additional resources and police officers to communities that may be showing a spike in crime or calls for service. When we first started doing this in July, one of the things we did during the ops meetings, is what they were called back then, is these were our top communities' calls for service. So pretty much, you know, this is how we were basing our deployment. What one of the downfalls we saw with this is, yes, it's telling us where the problems are, but it's not telling us exactly what the problems are or specific locations within those communities where the problems may be. As of 2 weeks ago, when Captain Setting took over the reins, we changed how we look at these maps and how we deploy our officers. And I'm going to let Mike talk about this map here in a minute, but as you can see, it's quite the different and more interactive map as compared to a bunch of numbers on a piece of paper. One of the things we discussed when we started deploying these jobs is that, A, we knew they were going to be in hotspot areas where there's a potential for violent crime, or people that are fleeing from you. If there's a group on the corner selling drugs, they see the car, they're going to flee. And to address that, to address Mr. Street's concern, I agree with him 100%, is the grant officers, there are two officers per car, so your backup's built in. So from a safety standpoint, but also from being able to be proactive by having two officers right there for them, it's two officers per car. They're normally running 4-hour blocks. And because it's a voluntary pay job, extra duty assignment, whatever you want to call it, we can control the details on what those officers do during these jobs. So one of the things we've mandated, also as Mr. Street spoke about, is foot patrol. In every grant, we say some foot patrol must be done. Sometimes it's not done as much as others because of the rain, weather, if they have a prisoner, that prohibits them, but we're mandating that in there and mandating that they put it on their timesheets that they submit for review as well. I know one of the main emphasis, too, has been using technology to better make us more efficient and to give us the information we need to act upon. And this is one example of technology we use, and I'll let one of our crime analysts, Mike Walsh, tell you a little bit.
Thank you.
No.
Michael Walsh, from Crime Analyst. The map that you're looking up here on the screen was developed using some of the mapping software that we've actually are piggybacking with land use. It's what they keep their all the parcel information in, the street information, what generates the files are used in the CAD for dispatch. Same mapping system. One of the tools that's in there is what they call hotspot mapping. We're very fortunate that we get very good, clean data coming out of recon dispatch for where our complaints are. And when we start applying some of the software behind this, it gives us an ability to set certain parameters, pull back certain sets of data, look at it in different ways. And one of the things it gives us here is a density mapping. The purple that you see in the lower center of the screen is sitting above Hampton Green townhouses. Dean Street, Revelle Street, Bayless Street. That's one of our prime pay job areas. What it's showing us is that most of our crime happening in close proximity in the time that we ran this map for is happening in a very focused area. It tells us, one, where to put our people, but it also shows us some of the outlying areas that we need to look at. This is used. Lieutenant Crowell is down with me just about every week to say, where are we looking at some of the more focused hotspots? It also gives us the ability to compare and contrast over time. When we look at time, this is a kind of flat to look at, but it's an analysis of pretty much those same calls over that geographic area, a little broader because I have to use some different, tell me what days, what times of the day it's happening. When you're looking at this map, the bottom right is by hour. At 1700, 5 o'clock in the afternoon is the peak single time for having complaints down in that area.
So we can start tailoring that probably Wednesdays and Saturdays in the late afternoon going into the evening time is when we can put an officer in that area, and the officer is most likely to be in the right place at the right time to address the criminal activity before somebody has to pick up the telephone and call us. So that's where we went with the temporal analysis piece.
And again, as we, you know, the emphasis is on technology. We all, you know, every time we decide, we discuss any predictive policing meetings we have every week, where do we need to put resources? We look at the first map that you saw. Next thing is we do is the analysis, see dates and times when we put it. We also get a summary, next slide, Mike, for the Route 9, back one. For the Route 9 area, so again, we're seeing Wednesdays and Saturdays are the peak times where we're going to deploy our officers, and starting at, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon is when we're going to get the most, you know, return on our investment of putting the officers out there on the extra duty funded jobs. When we post these jobs, again, they're voluntary. They're posted to the police portal system, so there's open competition for those. So not only, you know, one officer is chosen all the time to get these jobs, they're typically running 4-hour blocks. And what we've done through these grants so far, since July, there's been approximately 1,900 hours of policing that we've been able to provide extra to Newcastle County that's not impacted the regular patrol division, because these are extra duty officers, nor has it impacted our operating budget. And these are officers are being paid for by outside funding sources and the grants. And again, we're putting them in targeted areas to try to address some of the problems that we're seeing.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
I just have
one question, maybe everybody has it. When the extra duty officers are going into an area, do the regular patrol officers remain in that area as well if there are patrols?
Yes, and that was actually one of my bullet points. Okay. I skipped over, so thank you. And that's another side benefit of this, is not only are we putting 1,900 hours of additional resources out there pretty much free of charge to the county taxpayers, but that enables the regular assigned patrol officers not to be in these neighborhoods. You know, as we all know, if we don't have an officer in Wilton, an officer is going to be dispatched to Wilton.
And I don't
now mean, they can go elsewhere to address problems, right, and hopefully get off that 911.
And I don't mean to be picky, yes, but you made a comment at no cost to county taxpayers.
But we all pay federal taxes.
All money comes from taxpayers somewhere. All money.
You are correct.
Eventually.
And just to go over some of the successes we've seen since we've been using grant funding, is the next slide, Mike. And what we did is we did an analysis of the Route 9 corridor area using the predictive policing maps of what it would have looked like in 2011 and what it looks like today.
And those high purple densities that you're seeing are all quality of life complaints and in progress complaints. So understand when you're seeing that, and I know it looks a little bit like a weather map, but look at the reduction in the bright purple on that 2012 map, where we've used predictive policing and federal JAG money to put these guys in these areas. I see the reduction because we know where, when the crime is occurring, and we're putting the resources there before it occurs. So if nothing else, it's crime suppression. Go ahead, Pat.
Now, looking at the map, I'll let Mike Walsh talk about it a little bit more. It shows success, but does it show 100% win? No, it doesn't. It shows that crime's retreated. If you look at the purple areas and the darker areas on your left-hand map, we've seen they've kind of retreated and condensed to the Rosegate area. So this map is telling us, hey, we need to have some more federal funding. We need to have more resources, whether it be grant pay jobs or MET, and we're kind of teaming that up now. Acting Captain Martinez and I met earlier today. Between his MET officers and the pay jobs, we're trying to supplement each other and piggyback each other to try to keep the pressure on a more continuous basis. So we know now that, granted, this area is still leading police service, but we've had a win to where now we need to focus on that one area, and hopefully that'll make the other areas disappear as well.
Mike? Okay. Lieutenant summed it up pretty well as to what
question, if you wouldn't mind.
I'm sorry.
Okay, a second. Councilman?
Since it's my area, and I just want to highlight the fact, if you look to the left, look at Oakmont, it's that whole area, and it's centered around that park. You look at Rosegate, centered around the playground in that area. But two administrations overruled me when I said, take the equipment out the park. You don't have the police officers to go in the park, so take it out. They put it in anyway. And the kids can't use it.
And somehow or another in Rosegate with that little playground, it's like the criminals couldn't be safer there. It's the safest place in the world for a criminal committing a crime because you can't see it. They see y'all coming in, see you coming out. But again, nobody wants to change anything.
I don't have an easy answer for that. I agree that sometimes the playgrounds, usually they're damaged, unfortunately, and our children don't get to enjoy them like they should.
Well, they put all the equipment in there, and it's plastic. They found a way to get high and burn it up anyway.
Mike, okay. Captain Setting pretty much threw down the challenge to the large group of us in the last 2 weeks of find a way to tell me where to put the cops, when to put them, in a way that they will be in the right place before we get the call from 911. So they don't have to travel, so that they are where they need to be. A couple of us sat down, we went through the CAD dispatch call type list, and there's about 300 different ways you can categorize a complaint for a cop to be sent out to a scene. And we asked the question of every one of them, if there were a cop at this location when this activity occurred, would either A, they have deterred the activity from happening or been in a position to make an apprehension? In effect, negating the fact that we'd ever get a 911 call on that particular activity. So we generated that list of CAD call types. We pulled back just the complaints that match those, and we started playing with mapping them. And what you're looking at right now is Edgemoor Gardens, Edgemoor Terrace area, which we talked about earlier. We were talking about it in predictive policing this morning, meeting our in-house this morning. So this is actual what we were working with earlier today. This answer to ask question one, you see in the top left corner, it's 12 a.m. And right now we've got a pretty healthy density, was working, right in the center of the community, sort of up to the top, a little bit to the left. But we're finding that Rising Drive's the main drag, but where we're getting the calls from are a little bit off the main drag. What we were able to do with these is put them in motion and time-lapse them. And you're seeing as we move through the hours, 6 a.m., very little going on, 8 a.m., neighbor begins to pick up, the areas move around, noon, we're starting to get some serious density in a couple places. 4 p.m., that's the bus stop at the top of the hill on Rising Drive. As we get into the evening, we're starting to move down off to the edge of the community. And we get back to midnight, and we're back in this area, sort of the open area between Edgemoor Gardens and Edgemoor Terrace. We're now learning that that is where, not only are the maps telling us that that's where we need to have the cops at 12 a.m., but we're also hearing that back from the community when we get in and talk to the folks. So we've gotten the ability to, with the technology, say this is where we need to put the cop at the right time, and that's what Lieutenant Corral is targeting with the pay jobs, the extra duty assignments, as we move forward. This information, versions of these maps, the complaints that are behind the data that creates this map are being put out right now to every officer in the department. They have access to look at these, see where they need to be.
In their cars, Mike.
In their cars. And give them the opportunity that rather than responding to a drug complaint that by the time they get there was called in 90 minutes earlier, that the drug dealer is gone. If they have contact with the caller's frustrated. They feel that they just wasted their time driving across the county for something that's already happened and done with, that they have the opportunity to be in the right place at the right time to not have to make that trip in the first place.
And, you know, you see all these maps and fancy things, you say, does it really work or is it smoke and mirrors? Well, we can prove that it works. And it worked this, actually last week, I'm sorry, is based on the very first predictive meeting that Acting Colonel Setting held, we said Edgemoor needs some additional officers. So we deployed some paid job officers up into that area. Within, I think, the first hour and a half of their shift, they had made an arrest for possession of heroin. On Rising Drive. They brought that person back to do all the processing. A regular sector car, as you mentioned, sir, he saw those maps in his portal on his in-car laptop earlier in his shift. He goes up there, he's patrolling. Next thing you know, he's got three prisoners for a large amount of currency seizure, a bunch of drugs, as well as a gun in a hidden compartment with an obliterated serial number. So, you know, we had our first two officer team in there based on predictive policing. They had an arrest. Sure enough, they're back doing the paperwork and, you know, a sector card saw that. And he even wrote in his notes, you know, saw the map, went up there, he gets someone else as well. Now, because of what those two officers did was a more serious crime where it would have tied up a whole bunch more police resources averted, I would say yes, especially considering some of the history of some of the prisoners involved.
And Councilman Cartier?
Edgemoor Gardens is my district. I spend a huge amount of time on Edgemoor Gardens. And public safety and improving policing is job number one there. And, you know, it's a well-known trouble spot in the county. And just to, you know, congratulate you folks and to say, you know, this is the kind of thing I'd like to see for Edgemoor Gardens. And to give you the bigger perspective that, you know, we have a huge project underway in Edgemoor Gardens of community development, housing rehab, and that's only going to succeed, I believe, in the long run if we are able to create an atmosphere in that community that it is indeed a safe community. People are only going to want to move there and take part in community activities if we measurably increase the safety. So I'm finding this briefing particularly compelling, and you know, I'm encouraging you to do more.
And for everybody's benefit, when I run these maps, I'm not running the small snippets of just Sparrow Run, just Edgemoor Gardens, just Alton Park, just the Route 9 Quarter. We run the entire county, and we have found a couple places that popped up that typically we wouldn't have found on our radar, and we think we're finding them early, because we're still learning with this, but what we're seeing in some of these trends is, as you guys will tell us, the suspicious person complaints, the disorderly conduct complaints, the noise complaints are the ones I start seeing typically in these blooms. We were playing with this in the Sparrow Run area, and we saw a bloom starting on one of the streets in Sparrow Run where we don't typically have calls for service, we don't typically have problems. The other areas have gone flat from the amount of police presence that were in there after the homicide that we had a couple of months ago. And I brought up this particular bloom, this one particular street, in one of our weekly meetings. And one of the drug detectives is in the back row, and I says, I have a search warrant pending for number 4 on that street, which was right where the bloom was sitting. So what we're seeing is, even if we aren't getting the hard drug complaints, if we're not getting the shootings, we're not getting the major calls for service, these things that people just know are not right in their community are the things that we can start using to look at and predict. We may never know how successful we are with this because we're not going to know what we predicted, you know, what we prevented.
So in the, you know, just going to speak to that very quickly, that, you know, these are quality of life complaints. Left to the 911 treadmill, they'll be triaged, and there'll be hours and hours and hours of waiting and more frustrated constituents. This way we're doing it right now, they're actually being addressed. They're not waiting for a 911 call to come in. And I just want to highlight, you know, that even though the patrol officers have this exact same information and they have the ability to go into a directed patrol mode, these actual officers assigned and teams assigned from special operations are effectively reducing the crime that you're seeing by de facto. When you look at these maps, you're watching those purple plumes kind of turn orangey and turn yellow and go down. So this is a very effective way of policing, and it's actually targeting the things that the constituents are really concerned about, which ends up being your graffiti, your speeders, the kids drinking in the park, the drugs, and so forth and so on. It's a better way to police. We're taking our first step in it. We have to have more partnerships. We're not done. We're going to work with county code. We're going to work with housing. We're going to work with our Safe Streets guys that focus on recidivism. We have a lot to do. I'm not going to say we're not. But the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. I've been here 2 weeks, and I'm going to try and change it.
Councilwoman Diller?
For those of us who have communities on that list, is it possible to sit down and just take a look at what's going on in those communities from your maps? You know, we just got Whispering Pines meeting again after a number of years. So those folks are primed, and let me tell you, I heard exactly what you detailed. I'm calling, I'm leaving complaints about this, 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 and this. Nothing's going on. And, I mean, poor Mike Sneed got an earful when he was in that meeting. But I think that it would help me to see what's going on there, because I'm getting descriptions, but to see what you're tracking would be enormously helpful.
Well, not only that, not only can I let you see the maps, Councilwoman, I would invite anyone and everyone from council and their aides to the 9 a.m. Tuesday morning meeting for predictive policing at police headquarters. There, we're not hiding anything, mm-hmm. and now this way of policing is clear that we're going to show wherever the problems are. Based on 911 calls, mm-hmm. that's who's getting the resources. So there's no more fighting over the resources. We know where to put the resources based on these maps. Mm-hmm. Like we said, we're not looking at the top five prime areas. Walsh is explaining to you, we're looking at the whole county. And that's a better purview for us, and we're going to move the resources to where we see these quality of life complaints. And if that includes 11 sector Greenville and Route 9, and it's going to be all over. But it is definitely a better way of policing. We're not finished tweaking it. We've got a ways to go. But I invite council to the 9 a.m. Tuesday morning meeting, which is a predictive policing meeting, where we look at what problems we have, the hot spots we're dealing with, then we review the resources that we have at our availability, including our traffic services unit, mounted patrol unit, any additional resources, including the directed patrols from the patrol division. And we tackle these things. So far in two meetings times, we have literally identified the five biggest hot spots in Newcastle County, and we've put the resources there. So we have to get rid of the old measuring sticks of saying we're going to measure the department's success on response time, because we can't do that anymore, driving a million miles an hour over a million miles. That's done. And we can't, you know, use the traditional measuring stick of saying we arrested a bunch of people and we wrote a bunch of tickets. These are not good measurements. What we have to see is an overall reduction in crime, crime suppression, and the reduction of fear.
President Pro Tem Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to get back, if I could, for a second to kind of move too quickly for me. With the lieutenant that talked about the funding sources, the grants, I want to note for the record that HUD does also support policing. It's not just a housing kind of.
We actually discussed HUD today, sir, and we're actually starting to tap into that grant to do specifically Route 9 communities, and those jobs got posted before I came to this meeting today on the portal, so our hope is and our expectation is really signed up. But
yes, sir, Lieutenant Fieser can address your question, sir, because I'd like to talk to her, explain where this money's coming from and why we have the amount that we have at present, and we've been spending it, you know, very carefully and wisely. Lieutenant.
The question that I have is, how many of these grants, we have Sally, Jag, et cetera, how many of these grants are actually competitive grants compared to, or a percentage of the grants, or a percentage of the dollars that are competitive, and what part of those come to us because we are an agency of so many people, so many residents?
The Jag grants we just get because they're typical every year we get those. The COPS money, Lori, do we have to compete
with? Our grant writer is here, Ms. Lori Kane.
Lori Kane. The JAG money actually is based on a formula, based on our crime and our population. So we know that we've been getting that since 05. So we do continue to get that. It's not discretionary in that sense. It's discretionary in that we, it depends on our crime at any given time. So Wilmington and us are usually hand in hand as far as the amounts that we get. COPS is very discretionary, very competitive. Bulletproof vest. Just to run down the real quick, bulletproof vest is based on how many officers. There's a five-year window with your vests. So basically, when you start coming to that end of the five-year window, you want to start looking at putting in more money for that 50% reimbursement. Criminal Justice Council, absolutely discretionary. We compete with every law enforcement agency in the state for lots of different programs. Criminal Justice Council themselves will deploy money to the courts, to law enforcement, to domestic violence. It all is a big pot of money that then gets separated within law enforcement itself. SLEAF and Sally and Edie, they're state grants. I'm not too familiar about that, but I believe we get an allocation. And Highway Safety Competitive and HUD, we fall with it. It's a county grant. We slide in there on HUD. It's the CDBG, which is your Community Development Block Grant. But the premise that I have always written that grant on is that when you have the crime rates low, housing will then flourish. If the houses are in an area where crime is, you know, kind of out of hand, people don't want to buy there. So it's a matter of redeveloping those neighborhoods, revitalization. So we do get HUD money based on just the census tract over on the Route 9. So, thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you, Councilman.
Captain?
We went through everyone, correct? That's it, sir. I hope it gives you some idea of what we're doing.
No, you did. And I might say, I've known you for a long time. And, you know, I've been around the county police for a long time, and I can tell you that you're passionate about policing.
I am, sir.
I think everybody in this room is passionate, but you go 150 mile an hour.
I don't call you Captain Hurricane for nothing.
So, but we appreciate the explanation so far, and we'll continue to have dialogue and questions and everything.
Thank you,
Councilman sir. Street, I'm going to go with Councilman Cartier and President, and then President Pro Tem. Councilman Street.
Couple 3 points I want to make. One, during the course of the presentation, it was mentioned when they showed Edgemoor Gardens, and you specifically mentioned the bus stops. Well, it's the same in the county it is in the city. The drug dealers come out when the school buses come home, okay? And that graphic showed that. It's a problem, and it's a problem we need to address because they're targeting our kids. They're targeting our kids for drug use. They're targeting our kids for as drug dealers. And we, as those who purport to be concerned, school officials, parents, everybody, we need to understand what's actually going on. And that's across the board systemic. Two, went to, got the information, where did he say he went to? He went to the land use department. Now, I've sat here for 8 years and said, I'm gonna leave land use and land use to the, and land use issues to the land use experts. Well, I can't get away with doing that anymore because it's all directly related. And when we look at land use and land use issues, we gotta look at housing populations and turnover of houses and what we authorize. Because we have been, we as the government been a part of creating some of these high crime areas and all the gridlock that goes along with that. And the final point, Chief, that I want to make with you is, I voted for the contract. I voted for the contract because I caught a lot of grief from the FOP when I didn't vote for the sheriff's contract because of the absolute diversity in that department. But I voted for the contract with the understanding I was not happy based on not what I thought, but based on what the PERF report said.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and when the colonel called himself slapping me going out the door, he mentioned the PERF report. Okay, but what the PERF report said is exactly what I said. We don't do community policing because community policing, conceptually, and the PERF report said it, not me, requires continuity of officers, continuity of times. And
yes,
based on that contract, deference was given to giving all the officers the opportunity to work night work, work overtime, everybody make night work, everybody make the same amount of money to have access to it, and we threw community policing out the window. And all I'm saying is, when the next time contract comes back,
yes, sir.
Will of counsel is will of counsel, but if it's devoid of that kind of ability to support community policing, I'm not going to support it. I don't care who agrees to it.
I understand, sir, but I intend to continue to support you and your constituents because it's my job and it's my duty and obligation, and it is my oath of office to protect everyone and anyone I can and change things the best I can in my short 2 weeks. I may be a fireman, but there are times when the room is burning, sir. So I'm working on putting out the fires as quickly as possible and changing the way we police, but I'm not a miracle worker. I just happen to be a passionate police executive, that's all. I care about this agency and I care about the people who live here.
Well, in my view, community
yes,
policing is good for the community.
Indeed.
It's also good for our officers.
Indeed.
Okay? Because you basically, you become familiar with the community, you become familiar with the good guys, the bad guys, and the strangers. And just as the report said and recommended, continuity of officers and continuity of times, which the contract in and of itself just totally disregards
them. I'm certainly striving for that, sir. I believe it comes with the geographical responsibility and the assignment of these resources, and putting these supervisors, frontline supervisors, on the road, leading from the front, set an example, and the message has to be consistent with the entire police department, that this is not a team anymore, this is not a unit, this isn't one person or the community services folks. This is something that has to become cultural, and a positive attitude and a forward-leading direction is infectious. And I submit to you that we will begin to have wholesome community policing and a reduction in overall crime and fear. Or I'm going to stand down, sir.
Well, don't quit. It's enough. We've been through how many chiefs and how many public safety directors.
Well,
and there's enough quitting going on. So
I appreciate your support in the end, sir.
Councilman Cartier.
I wonder if you could... I find this presentation today probably one of the best briefings I had from the police since I've been on council. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense. One of the things that is disturbing my constituents a lot is it seems that we've gotten in this pattern. You know, I'm familiar with the Brandywine 900. I live there, where, you know, we get a kind of wave of crime in the community. It goes here, it goes there, you know, all over the Brandywine 100. So I just wonder if you had any sense of that, and what's driving this, and so forth.
I was at a graffiti meeting last night, sir, and I don't want to belabor any points here, but it was interesting at that graffiti meeting what people were really upset about. Again, it's a quality of life type of complaint, and it's very disturbing, and it kind of says, hey, if there's graffiti over here, we can do what we want. And that was a point that Councilman Weiner made so clear, and I agree with him completely. And again, to speak to broken windows, I think what happens is because, like with the graffiti, you'll see the same name on the same 50 telephone poles for 2 years. Well, that's because the kid was 15, now he's 17, he got caught once, paid his, you know, $2,000, did his 200 hours of community service, now he's 18 and doesn't want to do graffiti anymore. So those poles are painted and a new kid comes along. So I think some of it speaks to juvenile delinquency, and I think some of it speaks to, you know, parental controls, and some of it speaks to a systemic problem with society of us not watching our own kids, and then setting an example that we're not going to go after graffiti artists, we're not going to go after the kids on the corner, we're going to fly by the people drinking in the parkland. We know they're drinking. We got the 911 complaint. We can see it on the computer in the car. We drive by them and we run to the hot complaint. We're all going to be heroes. We're going to run to the big domestic. We're going to run to this and run to that. Again, we got to take the special teams and stop the kids from drinking in the park at 7 o'clock because they're doing the graffiti at 10. And I submit to you that if we attack that quality of life issues, we will reduce overall crime. And I can't say that there won't be, you know, a couple of knuckleheads drinking beer, smacking mailboxes. All I can hope is that my guys are there to catch them.
One of the things that seems to predominate a lot of, with the, you know, their break-ins, you know, burglaries mostly, you know, it's driven by drug addiction, you know, and
yes, it
seems to be, you know, the problem of heroin,
yes,
drugs, further crime off of that, just, you know.
But again, the realignment of the agency is important because if we're going to say that property crime is our issue, and it is, believe me, it is our issue. It's our number one issue in Newcastle County. It's theft for motor vehicles and burglaries. You know, on a single weekend, we're knocking out, you know, 50, 60 cars, 30 burglaries. And we have a group of people that are, you know, very skilled investigators that go after that. But when you really are making a commitment, when you have six guys investigating all the property crime in Newcastle County, is that really an investment when we have one person in the DEA, which is a force multiplier? Well, are we really making an investment in fighting drugs when we have six people assigned to the drug unit? No, we have to look at restructuring the agency. It has to be done. It's long past due. And until we're going to invest in some of these areas, we're not going to put a huge dent into these markets. And again, you know, I was with the drug unit and the mobile enforcement team when we took down a three-generational heroin family over off of Lancaster Pike. And, you know, these guys sat down and said, we're going to make a deal. And we said, we're not making deals today. You're all going to jail. And they said, well, we can't believe it. I said, well, maybe you're dreaming. You're going to jail. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that you got to stop fooling around with these guys and put them in the revolving door. And we've got to lock them up.
And there's ways to do it, but we're not investing. We got 250 guys in uniform standing behind this badge, working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, giving police service to 500,000 people over 427 square miles. And if I can steal from Mr. Streets, they're driving a million miles an hour, a million miles across the county. We've got to rethink this. We can't. We don't have any more money, and we don't have any more resources to throw at this. We've got to change the way we do business. And that's what I'm doing here. This is a game changer.
Thank you.
Cartier was last. I'm going to hold Councilman Street for half a second. We've got President Bullock, President Pro Tem Hollins, and then back to Councilman
Captain
Street.
I appreciate your vision and your passion. And I want to commend you and your people here today, many I've worked with, including Cook, Martinez, Glory, and Bob. These excellent people.
Thank you.
Also, I want to commend you. Let me put my preacher hat on. My church is on Route 9. And we have a serious urban ministry and outreach initiative. And over the years, we've partnered with the department. And the product has been excellent. I want to encourage you to continue to seek community partnerships as you go forth with your vision. Lastly, how can we as a council be helpful so that the department is successful?
Sir, mostly I ask for your support and your oversight to make sure we're coloring within the lines and doing our job. And I simply ask that, you know, we focus on the real mission of the agency and the real mission of moving forward and not, you know, the sideline stuff. I believe that the lion's share of the police officers that wear this uniform and stand behind this badge take the oath of office seriously, and I think we're all out there. Believe me, no police officer wakes up in the morning and says, I hope I shoot somebody today, or I hope I get shot today. No, we're all waking up and we're all saying our secret little prayer that we can go out there and give the best service we can and go home safely to our families. And some people, you know, understand that, and others think, you know, well, maybe you don't deserve to go home. Well, we have to fight. We have to stand our ground when people turn on us. But I want to give the best police service we possibly can give, and I want to support the community, and I can only do that with council support. That's all I ask from you, sir.
And I'm big on communication, so let's keep the door open. Let's talk.
Again, sir, I invite you to our meetings. I believe in communication. We're going to expand on this predictive policing, and I would like as many eyes and fingerprints on this as possible, and I want input where it works and where it doesn't work, because I'm not afraid to change it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. President Pro Tem Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do they actually call you Captain Hurricane?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes.
I don't see anybody smiling.
No, they didn't agree with you.
Yeah, they even stuck it on my office door,
wow.
Councilman.
It's actually a Category 5.
my question has to do more with something I read last week in the newspaper about other jurisdictions and how they disclose certain procedures and policies and so forth. And the article also said that in Delaware, agencies are reluctant to disclose this, and I was wondering, have you all had any kind of discussions around that disclosure so that public sort of understand what the policies and procedures are when we're using deadly force?
I read the articles. I have not had a chance to round table with my senior staff members, but I'm going to bet you the majority of my guys are going to say Air Force Continuum has been reviewed and reviewed and reviewed and tweaked and tweaked and tweaked over the years, and I have no intention of hiding it, sir. I mean, I of course will wash things through county law, but I believe that if the other agencies are putting their force continuum on the internet for people to see and understand how we go from, sir, can I talk to you, to a shooting,
right,
then we should do that. Information is education and power.
Thank you.
I'm not against it.
Thank you.
Other questions from Councilman Tackett? Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me for a half second. Councilman Street? All right. Councilman Tackett and Councilman Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and I think the majority of us do support you, you know, and we try to work in coordination with you, and we just need a clear, concise chain that we need to engage, because you all do your job. You go out there, you respond to these calls, you know, take care of the call, you get back in the car and you head off. where are the ones that are going to these community meetings? Where are the ones that they're, you know, grabbing? Where are the ones that have to take the calls into our office, you know?
Yes.
And a lot of them ad lib, you know. I just, you know, had Major Becker. We were dealing with one, you know, oh, the cops showed up. They were ready to go for this guy. It was totally, you know, exaggerated. But we just need to know if there's an issue, what's going on. We need, you know, who do we go to? Who do we contact? Who's there? You know, that way we're not running over, sending, you know, five different emails, you know, trying to have five different people working on five different things. Here's your chain. Here's where you go. This is who you engage, you know. And
I'd be happy to clarify that, sir. There is a senior lieutenant with a vast amount of experience in the form of Lieutenant Laura Sullivan is responsible for reviewing all council complaints, deploying resources, and getting back an answer. And that the reason we put a person of that tenure and experience in that position is because we know that a large amount of the complaints for quality of life issues are coming to council. And that's why we have a lieutenant down there doing that. I mean, she should be your first point of contact. And if that wasn't clear before, I apologize, Councilman.
Oh, no. I think you all have a clear communication. We just don't want it to get boggled down, you know. And I know the force is dedicated. They're here. They're committed. They're professionals. And regardless of who sits in your seat,
yes,
they still have their mission, and they're still continuing to do it each and every day. But I know there are promotions and things, and there's departmental movement. So it's just trying to keep track on where.
Sir, I'll try and clean those lines up, show you an email, and make sure you're contacting the right people for the right reasons.
Send everybody one, Chief. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Will do.
Councilman Street.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President.
Yes,
I. I'm concerned, and I don't say things here among us any differently than I say in a civic association meeting, a community meeting. And what I've said publicly is there are those that have a view that we can't arrest our way out of this. I agree with that. What I've said in response to that is, well, we have to arrest our way into it. But beyond that, we as a government have an obligation to do more than just police. We have a responsibility to provide programs, services, and we have a responsibility to be advocates. If you look at the city of Wilmington, gets all the publicity, all the comments in the paper, so forth and so on, about the number of homicides. And I said this previously, if you look at where we are, shootings are up. Just in our case right now, they haven't resulted in as many deaths. But then you look at what we're doing preventive-wise. And as the economy failed, we started taking programs and services from kids. And I respectfully represent to you today that the children that we failed to educate today will be the criminals and the prostitutes tomorrow. We have a responsibility. We talked about funding with programs, so forth and so on. When the state went to cut its budget, first thing they did was take the state police and the DARE program, which was targeting elementary school students, took it out, eliminated it. So where then, and we know in one community, right now the drug of choice is the heroin that you smoke. In other communities, it's crack cocaine. But we're not doing what I think we should be doing, working collectively to prevent those things. And all this is drug driven on one end, and it's financially driven on the other. Because there are a bunch of folks that I can't work, I can't pay the rent, I'm gonna steal. It's a matter of survival. So when we look at economic development, we need to be concerned with economic development for its designated purpose, but it also helps significantly to reduce crime. And when we look at prevention programs and activities, especially for our children who we don't want to become criminals, I think we, as this government and other governments that we have a responsibility to work with, need to do a lot more to make their job easier. That's just my opinion, but it's with foundation and with evidence that if you take care of it now, it reduces the likelihood of having to deal with it later.
Any other question or comment from council? Just want to thank you, Captain,
thank
our
you,
acting
sir.
Chief, all the staff members that you know are with you this afternoon. We look forward to many more meetings and briefings, and I think we've all said it one time or another, but some say it more than others. But you know, when we talk to folks, we have the best law enforcement agency you're going to find anywhere. And you look at the men and women of our department, put them up against anybody, put them side by side, and highly trained, highly motivated, dedicated. I said to the president the other day, there's a kind of a famous saying that John Kennedy used to say, change is the law of life. Those who look only to the past, the present, or certain miss the future. You know, we've constantly got to reevaluate, look to the future, how do we improve? But we need to give you the tools you need to operate.
Yes, sir.
One of the things that comes right fresh to my mind is we have to continue to insist that we have back-to-back academies, and that we continue to fill them positions and fill the numbers and make sure that you have the personnel to do the job and equipment to do the job. You folks, and Laurie just stepped out, but you folks do a tremendous job in competing for these grants. And I said it earlier with the in-car cameras. You know, when you look at all the law enforcement in the state of Delaware, you know, the state, Capitol Police, you look at all the various local police departments, town police departments, they're all competing. City police departments, Newark and Wilmington, they're all competing for the same dollars.
You're correct, sir.
And there is a reason that Newcastle County is very successful in getting those dollars. I think that we have a top quality police department. And, you know, we're here to work with you. It is a partnership, as the president said. It's a partnership of government, its employees, and the community, and everybody working together. It's not going to, you know, change and different things will improve in the future. It's not going to all happen overnight. It's never happened overnight. But at least if we make the commitment to work together and support one another, support our men and women in brown, you know.
You have that commitment from me, sir, and I feel confident that I speak for the people sitting behind me and around me that have been nothing but supportive. And as we moved into a new direction in a very quick manner, normally change is rebuffed, it gets bucked off, it hasn't happened.
You got a good team to make
Thank
the change
you,
with you. Councilman Redding?
Yes, one thing, Captain.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to thank you and the department for your assistance in the past years and in the future for my district.
Thank you, sir, very much.
Okay. Let the record reflect that Councilman Powers is here. And any other question from council? Hearing none, any comment or question from the public? Okay.
Just real quickly, on behalf of Councilman Mark, I thank the department as well for the easy to... But
can we get one of those gold alerts for him?
I don't want to start anything.
You want to have to look for
listen, if he's not
you
here,
want to find one?
Yeah, but I don't want him brought in.
Quick comment, sir. First, I'm assuming that the promotions are all one vacancy for each job announcement. One sergeant, one lieutenant, one captain, or
sir, as people are retiring and finding other jobs, it's pretty fluid right now. I can't give you a firm answer. I believe right now with Lieutenant Wendy Hudson retiring, it'll be one lieutenant. I'm convinced that my position is one captain, and that's you know down the road, and that should be one. And if you promote one person to lieutenant, therefore that opens the vacancy for sergeant. As I explained earlier, the sergeants are critical to the agency.
Thank you. And
yes, sir.
Just a quick comment on community policing. I would like to thank Lieutenant O'Sullivan for the cooperation that she provided to our council office, especially affecting over a dozen arrests for recent burglaries and thefts that occurred in the Greenwood area.
Yes, sir.
Just to let everyone know that it is working, and the communication that we have with her and her officers are doing a fine job. And thank you for it.
It's greatly appreciated, sir.
Okay. January, we're going to delve into the emergency medical service world again.
Yes, sir.
And I know that two of the council out of the 13 is going to come full tilt in January, asking for consideration as council, the department administration, to add at least a 12-hour unit up south of the canal. We have had numerous incidents that we have documented, including two separate school bus accidents that happened almost simultaneous in rainy weather. Closest unit came from up at Glasgow at the park in that vicinity. And, you know, it's just we've got to take a look at time of day. We've got to take a look at traffic. We've got to take a look at industry and business that's being built. The MOT area is continuing to expand. We've got Amazon. We've got truck traffic. And we've got one paramedic unit. And so at some point, you know, come hell or high water, we'd like to have at least a 12-hour paramedic unit, a backup south of the canal. The four wheels on it can still take it north of the canal. It's needed right across the bridge. But it needs to be in a position where it can back up that unit when it's out. So that's kind of where we're coming from in January, and possibly February we'll come back and visit with the K-9 operations policies,
yes,
procedures and everything.
I look forward to it.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Number one, I do concern raise a question about making public our policy as it relates to deadly force. I think we should do that sooner rather than later. Number two, I haven't been here for my little 8 years like a lot of you. We have never been debriefed as relates to certain police incidents. Now, in June, when the lady was bitten by a dog in Councilman Cartier's district, supposed to review policy and get some type of debriefing, and then we were told that because there was a likelihood of pending litigation, we were going to push that off. Well, if there's pending litigation at the end of the day, if there's pending litigation, there's a settlement, they got to come in here and get a check. So whatever rules and standards of conduct that we need to adhere to, even if we go into executive session, I don't think that kind of information on these incidents and matters should be held strictly with the administration. So that's something I think we should take up. I think we still have, as a council, we still need to know the ins and outs and have the questions answered that we were raising in June, and we deferred because of potential litigation. I just think that practice needs to cease. And, you know, I've waited for a period of time, and I wait till February to go through the policies and procedures as relates to the use of K-9. Then I'll wait. But I think it's extremely important that we know, that we look at it, review it. You look at it, review it in. At the end of the day, the public know. If the policy is going to be, and if the policy is, it's okay to turn dogs loose on people's children, then that's fine. But then we have a responsibility to at least tell people that's what we're going to do. Okay? If your child runs from one of our police officers, we have every right and we will stick the dog on. If that's the policy and that's going to be the practice, then at least let the public know.
And let me acknowledge, you know, for the record, that it's question and concern that you've brought forward, both at the council level, council meeting level, and in committee. I've already touched base with our acting chief in reference to K-9, and we spoke about some of the things that he and the staff members are looking at and reviewing, and that's what we decided, that, you know, to come back, give them some time to turn around and get involved together as a team, take a look at things, and then report back to council, maybe a overview of how we operate and any changes that might be necessary.
I'd like to come back in February, sir, with the people in the room that need to be here to address those issues. And I don't believe it's all right that we turn our dogs loose on anyone's children, and I am reviewing the policy.
Councilman Spiner.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. In order to best use the efficient law enforcement staff we have here,
I just need to publicly cancel the gold alert. Councilman Weiner's been found.
Thank you. Thanks for putting me on the record. Well, the preceding message was presented by Mr. President.
No.
You all right?
I'm good.
Okay. Councilman Weiner is present. Hearing no further business, no other business. Motion's in order.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion made and second to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Yeah, for real.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I got you, sir.
Chrissy said, give you this.
This ain't enough.
I know. I told her that.
Okay.
Is this all?
And didn't follow the plan, didn't, you know,
he's just not a tourist there.